Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you
are listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on MyParanormal.com.
Welcome to another edition of My Darkest Hour. I'm your host, Stefan Brigati, and thank you for joining me on this wonderful Thursday evening. Hope you guys are out there. Hope you guys are safe, doing whatever it is you guys are doing. I know things are still pretty weird out there, but things are getting a little bit normal-ish, I guess it would be, because it's not quite normal. I don't think things are going to be what we remember them as being normal. But, hey, at least we're getting through this, and hopefully everyone's doing all right there. So with that being said, you know, welcome to the show. We've been doing this quite a while, and I talk a lot about you guys have been listening to me for years and years talk about the Paracons that I do. Obviously, we recently did the show for my good friend Doug Carnahan, who passed, who was doing a lot of the Paracons that I was accustomed to doing. And, you know, we talk about going to these things as not just yearly paracons, but these are more to us as family reunions. And I'm always coming back and bragging about how great the show, the event was, the things we did. You guys are following me on the live streams, the walkthroughs, the Washoe Club, still getting a lot of hits on that stuff. So thank you so much for that. But I always want to talk about the people that I meet at these events that I just think some of them just blow me away, absolutely fascinating. And one of my guests tonight, I'm really, really excited to have on the show, is known as the Gentleman Psychic, Richard Lale Lillard, which I'm trying to get the name right because I totally butchered his name at Virginia City, but that's my stepping stones, I guess. I have a tendency to do that, and I'm sorry for those who have done that before. But we get through this. But the whole thing was when I met this gentleman, just blown away by the personality, blown away by the energy this person has. You know, we're going to get into some details about some things that are a little bit different for the show, which I'm real excited about. But Richard Lale has been in the paranormal for a while, obviously since being young and a psychic, which we'll get into when we bring him on the show. He's also known for acting. He's been in a film called Tangerine. Obviously, a lot of you who saw that I was posting about Richard Lale coming on the show reminded me of the Ghost Adventure Show, the Pasadena Ritual House, which is an incredible episode. You know, I just watched it again tonight. Just want to let you guys know that it's out there, and you can go find it on some of the Travel Channel archives, or you can find it on YouTube. And, of course, Richard has his own shows or his own YouTube channel, which I highly recommend you guys go to see, which I'll put the link up. Actually, I think I did put the link up a couple of days ago, so I really want you guys to go check that out. So, With that being said, let's go ahead and bring him on the show. So let's get him out of the green room here.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hi, I'm well, my friend. How are you, Stefan?
I am absolutely fantastic. Thanks for coming on the show and spending some time with us, and it really means a lot.
Oh, I'm really honored to be here. I really was impressed with your work, and I loved meeting you in Virginia City.
Absolutely, and that's what I was just telling the listeners about. As soon as I met you, it was like I could just feel the energy, and it wasn't like I'm meeting a stranger for the first time. It was like I'm meeting a familiar energy or something like that, because I just kind of linked with you and I said, oh, awesome, this guy's here. This is going to be great, because, you know, just walking around with you the night before and then meeting you and working with you at the Paracon, I could just put all these different things, and I actually thought your presentation was fascinating.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, it was my very first Paracon that I've worked, and I didn't know what exactly to expect. I didn't know what I was going to do, and Douglas, the late Douglas Carnahan, our mutual friend, as you'd said, Way, but he said to me, hey, you know, we have a couple of openings right now because people are being weird with all that's going on. And I was considering inviting you next year, but I really want you to come this year. I know it's late notice, but I would love for you to come. And I said, absolutely, I would be honored. And, you know, it was, I think, 2.5 weeks away, and I took the car and went.
That's awesome. I mean, and I'm glad you're able to make it this one, because we're still trying to figure out how we're going to do the next one. But, you know, we'll get there. So
I would imagine.
Absolutely. I mean, he kind of had all this stuff going for all of us to keep constantly doing these circles in different cities that really need these great Paracons. And now that he's not, you know, kind of running that ship, we're all trying to say, okay, who's got this now? Now who's steering right now? Because we're going to continue doing it. Because we have 10 years. It was a 10-year anniversary of that one. So I'm so thankful that Doug was able to make it to the 10th one, because we almost lost him the year prior. So that was a great thing.
Yeah, no, and what a good man. What a legend in his own time. Truly remarkable. I cannot say enough kind things about Douglas.
Absolutely. So one of the questions that I like to ask is a common question for a lot of people. My show goes from many, many different levels of the paranormal field, from, you know, cryptozoology to UFOs to ghosts to every gamut, because I want to keep it, you know, going with all the different stuff. But there's a lot of people out there that tune in and they're trying to learn about their own abilities. So the beginning question is almost like something you can kind of people can relate to. You were a clairvoyant as a child. So can you tell us a little bit about that discovery of your abilities when you were growing up?
Oh, sure. Well, when I was growing up, I knew things, and I just thought everybody knew things. I just thought that was what happened. There was an event surrounding the life and times of my father. I'll get into that detail a little bit more. But on a lighter note, there were times where he would be working and he would say, he was left-handed. He would say, where is my wrench? Where is my screwdriver? I can't find it anywhere. And he's patting himself down. And I said, it's in your pocket. He goes, no, it's not. I can't feel it anywhere. I said, it's in your right pocket. He goes, no, I'm left-handed. And I said, just try it. It's in your right pocket. And then he'd go, it's not. Oh, it is. It's there. Oh, okay. So there were things like that. And then on a little heavier note, when I was four, quite nearly five, my father came down with Guillain-Barré, which is French polio. And he was in really bad condition. He was in really bad shape. He was in hospital for, oh goodness, 6 months or better. He'd been in a coma for several months before the end, but he'd been in a coma. And people would ask me, they would say, what do you want for your birthday? And I said, my father is coming home for my birthday. And they would go, oh, bless, because, you know, Midwestern boy, oh, bless, which means you don't know, you don't know. So my father went through a series. He went through the coma. He then died in the hospital. They covered him up with a sheet. The nurse filled out the paperwork. The doctor had said, okay, we've done everything we can do. He exits. The nurse goes to exit, and she stops. And she comes back to my father's bed. And while she's standing there, for the first time in months, my father cleared his throat. So, I mean, it's nothing uncommon for the recently deceased to expel gases, but this was a clearing of the throat. So she picked up the corner of the sheet, and my father sat up in the bed and said, how are you today? And the woman passed out, fainted in the floor. The doctor came running back. And he says, what happened? And my father said, oh, I don't know, Doc. I just said hello, and she passed out. And the doctor said, let me tell you something. If a corpse had raised out of bed and talked to you, you'd pass out too. So my father stayed in the hospital for a little bit longer, and then he came home the day and the night before my birthday. And people would ask me, they'd say, well, aren't you excited? Your daddy came home. And I went, I knew he was going to, so why would I be excited? And I also remember saying, and I'll have him for 20 more years, maybe a little bit more, but 20 more years. 20 years later, he died the day and the night after my birthday.
Wow.
When I was 25. So,
That's crazy.
Isn't it? But there were things like that that happened all the time. I mean, that was sort of a pretty grandiose one that did happen. But there were other times. Sometimes when I would get into it, my parents adopted, not adopted, they took in foster children. And for a long time, I felt really badly about this one. But they took in foster children, and one was a year older than me. I'm not going to say his name because he's no longer with us. Teasing me and tormenting me. It was his daily ritual. And I looked at him and I said, you're going to regret that, because one day I will live in Los Angeles, California, and you will die in a car accident and your head's going to be cut off. And I said, don't worry, it won't happen until you're 25. Well, when he was 25, he was coming home in the rain and someone ran a stoplight and his motorcycle went into the air and severed his head. For a long time, I mean, we're talking, when I found out about that, I had guilt for maybe 15 years. And my mother, who is Native American and is also clairvoyant, she said, sweetheart, you didn't curse him. You didn't cause it. You just saw it. And so it's easy for you to think that you caused it, but you didn't. You just saw it.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, go on.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, so your family has generations of clairvoyants in the family, so it's kind of like a vein that's going through and continuing this line of clairvoyancy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Even in all of my immediate family, they don't bill themselves as psychics and mediums, or even in the Christian world as prophets. They just know things. They just can walk into a room and go, oh, I know this. Oh, I know this about you. Oh, I know, I feel this about you. And they use it in varying degrees, but they don't claim anything. It's just what they do. It's just, oh, I know things.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, you would just walk into a room and you'd be picking up on the energies and things that are happening in the room. I would assume. And like I tell a lot of people, the listeners out there, you know, there's different types of psychics in the world, and they have different levels of abilities, you know, because everyone just thinks, oh, psychic medium, yeah, you know, I know 10,000 psychic mediums. Well, you know, I work with a lot of them, and I see the work they do, and they're all a little bit different, so I think that's fascinating as well.
Well, it's a matter of interpretation. This is one of my things that I like to tell people. Now, there was a famous medium. Her name was Sylvia Brown, and she made some predictions that were not very accurate, and people gave her a lot of grief. One in particular, though, this one is one that I go, well, maybe she was right in this one. So she was on the Montel Williams show, and this woman stepped up and she said, my daughter was kidnapped. Will I ever see her again? And she says, sweetheart, no, I feel like she's gone from this world. I see her underground between two rocks, and I really feel like she's dead. Well, the woman cried, she let it out. Then the woman ended up by dying and never saw her daughter again. It turns out the woman had been kidnapped. The young girl had been kidnapped. She was being stored in a basement and was watching the Montel Williams show as it happened. The problem is that if you are to interpret it, and you see this person and you go, you will never see this person again, and you see someone underground and you see someone between rocks, and you see, and you're talking to this person, the way that you would interpret that is, well, she's underground, that means that, and you're not going to see her again, that means that one of you is dead and I'm talking to you. So it wasn't that she was, that Sylvia Brown was wrong, it was just she was interpreting it in a different way.
Yeah, she was describing what she was feeling and seeing, you know, she was telling them, and that's what she saw, underground between two rocks, and that could be the walls right there underground, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's how it works. You're just picking up on images and what you're seeing, you know. It's not detailed, but it might give you a little bit of a clue to look underground. I mean, something like that.
It's a little like interpreting a dream. Sometimes you'll be in a dream talking to your mother or your best friend or your father, but you're not actually talking to those people. It's your mind is interpreting for you something that you need to understand. And sometimes you can take a dream literally. Sometimes you can take the feelings that you get literally. And other times you have to go, okay, step back. Let me see what I see here. This is what I see. And I always tell people, this is what I see. I'm interpreting thoughts, emotions, feelings, pictures, and it's a lot of things to take in. So when I give advice, I'm giving advice. And if I won't do health for that very reason, because there's so many things that I'm not a doctor. I'm not a doctor, so I won't do health.
Okay, that makes sense. You don't want to give the bad information, but would you say, hey, you might want to just check something out just in case?
I mean, sometimes I have felt like there were times when I went, you know, just make certain you keep yourself checked out. Sometimes it's best to do that. And people tell me, oh, don't tell me anything bad. Don't tell me anything bad. I don't want to know anything bad.
That's why I'm asking. Wow.
I tell people, though, it's sort of like, because I have different methods that I use, different methods of divining. And one method is that I have misfortune telling cards. They're not fortune telling, they're misfortune telling cards. They're Edward Gorey, the Fantod pack. And they tell you bad things that to look out for, things that are dangerous for you. And people say, oh, no, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. But I tell them, it's sort of like if you're speeding down the highway and in front of you is a pothole and you know that pothole is there. You can slow down. You can change lanes. You can go around it. You'll be fine. But if you're speeding down the highway doing 80 miles an hour and then suddenly there's a pothole, you could throw your front end out of alignment. You could blow a tire. You could cause an accident. I mean, there's any number of things that could happen. If you would have just been able to see it ahead and slowed down and changed lanes, then you would have protected yourself.
Because you would have... Yeah, you would have known it's ahead, and you would have made the adjustment to, prepare for that.
And that's why I think it's good to have a balance. And that it's good to have a balance. I tell people, I'm not a doctor. Make certain that you keep yourself checked out. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's good advice. At least you're giving them a little bit of heads up, but you're not really telling them anything. Are they going to run out and get some kind of procedure done because they think something's wrong? But, you know, just to keep it real, just like, hey, I might as well check it out now before anything bad happens to me.
And I've learned, too, that I've learned, too, to use a little bit more tact. Years ago, when I was in Greece, I was performing as Freddie Mercury I was a lounge singer performing as Freddie Mercury in the Mediterranean.
And very cool.
I was out. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I lived in Vegas, and I lived in Greece and Denmark, Sweden. Moved to San Francisco, back to Vegas for a little while, back to here to L.A., all over. I've been all over. But I was performing as Freddie in Greece, and I went out, had a drink, and I met some people, and I had no problem talking to them. I was just, you know, open and laughing and talking. And there was I remember distinctly there was one man and two women, and I said something to her. She said something. I said, "Oh, thank you, Mary." And she said, "What'd you call me?" And I said, "Mary." She said, "Why'd you call me that?" I said, "Because it's your name." She said, "How do you know that?" I said, "Didn't you tell me?" She says, "No, that's my middle name, and I don't use my middle name. I would never have told you that." And I went, "Oh, well, I heard it." So she goes, "Well, what else do you know about me?" I went, "Oh, that's easy. Now, mind you, I was drinking." And I said, "Oh, that's easy. You work in the kitchen. You are so tired of tourists, and you just went through a bad breakup, and sometimes you're so depressed you want to put your head in the fryer."
Wow.
And she burst out into tears. "How did you know that? Why would you say that? How did you know that? Nobody knows that. How did you know this? How did you know this?" And then her friends got upset with me. They were going to they threatened to beat me up, and they were quite angry that I had outed her. And I went, "Well, she asked me what I knew, and I just thought it was common knowledge." So now I've learned to be a little bit more tactful when I feel that sort of energy from someone. I'll tell them, "Can we speak privately? You ask me what I know, I'll have to speak privately." And I would say something along the lines of, "Listen, I know you're going through a lot. It feels like there may have been a breakup. Your life is worth living. This is temporary. There are people who love you." That's the way that I handle it more now. But, I was young and I was drinking, and I just opened my mouth. She asked and I answered.
Yep, that's exactly it. And people need to remember to be careful what they ask for. I mean, someone's going to just be honest. Level. Yeah.
That is true on many levels. Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, I tell you.
I mean, well, it's not just even that. So for me, I communicate with energies. I communicate with what people would call gods and goddesses. I call them my friends. I call them, anyway. So I was driving along down Santa Monica Boulevard about 5 years ago in my old car. I have a penchant for old 1930s roadsters, even if it's a reproduction. But I was driving down. This time I've got a 1936 Jaguar with a Ford Pinto engine. But then I was driving a 1932 Fraser Nash with a Volkswagen engine.
And okay.
I was driving. It was a beautiful car. It was everything I wished for. And I was driving down Santa Monica Boulevard. And long story short, I was feeling really sorry for myself. And the universe, it spoke to me. I heard this voice, this female voice in my head. And she said, "You said this car was going to make you happy." I said, "It does. Forgive me. I love this car. Forgive me." She says, "It is everything you asked for, everything from the color to even the engine. You asked for this car." She said, "Look at that man. He doesn't have a car. He doesn't have anything. He is just getting on the bus because he doesn't have any car. In fact, he doesn't have a place to sleep. And where do you live?" I was driving by my apartment. And again, long story short, she went through this phase of asking me, "What do you want?" And I would say, "Well, I want blah, 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 blah." And she would say, "Yeah, you already did that, remember? You wanted to be treated like a rock star and live in Europe? Well, you weren't dying in Europe, and you were treated like Freddie Mercury, who was a rock star. What do you want?" So everything that I would do, she would go, "Yeah, you already did that. Yeah, uh-huh, you did that. You did that too." And it got down to the point where she asked me, "What do you want?" These last three times, "So what do you want?" And I said, "I know," and in those days I was pursuing acting. I said, "I know, I want to be an actor." She says, "You are. You have done film and television. That's acting." And I went, "Oh." She says, "What do you want?" I said, okay. "You want me to ask for more? Okay. I just want to be able to take care of myself. I want to do all right." She says, "You do all right. Nobody pays your bills but you. What do you want?" And I went, "Oh, yeah, I guess I should ask for more." So I said, "Okay, give me a moment. She says, "What do you want?" I said, "I know. Fail safe. This is it. I want to be famous." And she said, "You are? What do you want?" And I went, oh, goodness. Okay. Well, I didn't know. And then I drifted. Now I know what I want. And the universe is not always nice, but it's always kind. That's so true. Be careful what you ask for.
But that's sometimes that's what you got to do to realize what you really got going on. People always think they don't have enough or they're not doing something. And then with that reflection of, well, I want this, but then someone says, well, you have that, so now what? And then you realize, hey, my life's not so bad after all. I'm doing it. I've got it going on, right on.
Well, you know, it goes back to a story I heard about a jogger, an athlete. This man was an athlete, and he thought, you know what? I work out three or four times a week. I'm fit. I'm going to go run this triple marathon. So he gets out there, and he's an athlete, and he's running. And the first 100 or so miles, he's okay. He's all right. It hurts, but he's okay. And then it starts getting to the point where his knees hurt, his back hurts, his thighs are rubbing together, the blood is running down his legs because his muscular thighs are not built for running. And he is in so much pain, he evacuates his systems, and he goes, it hurts so badly. I've come so far, but no one would fault me if I just sat down right now. If I just sat down, no one would blame me because I'm in pain. And then he thought, no, I can do better. I've come this far. I can go a little further. So he pushed himself and went a little bit further. And then the same thing. I can sit down now, but I've come this far. He did it all the way until he finished the end of this marathon. He didn't come in first, but he did finish it. And now he runs marathons frequently. Maybe not triple marathons, but he now has trained his body to run marathons. And that's the way that we have to do it. So it's that one little step, I've come so far. This one little step, I've come so far. And we just have to keep – it's like a child, an infant, a baby that is learning to walk. They crawl and crawl and crawl, and they say, I want something, and this crawling isn't going to help me. I want that. So they struggle, and they stand up, and they try to take steps, and they fall down, and they hurt their little heads, and they hurt their little backsides, and they cry because it hurts. And then before long, the tears stop, and they try again, and they fall, and they hurt themselves, and they get up. And they do this repeatedly until they can take one step after another, after another, after another, until they don't have to learn it anymore.
And that's exactly it. It's baby steps, absolutely. And they get determined to do it until they get it, and then they move on, and they don't even think about it. Starts with walking, and the next thing you know, they're running.
Exactly. You can't run a marathon if you don't learn to walk.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to My Darkest Hour right here on LiveParanormal.com, History FM Radio, iTunes, and iHeartRadio. Thank you. We're having a conversation with Richard Lael and talking about abilities and some experiences dealing with people as a psychic. So let me ask you this. I know you're we're just talking about you being an actor, and I didn't know until recently I saw your biography, and then I'm like, oh, cool. And you have some acting work. Well, how'd you get involved with that?
Well, I got into the theater because I thought it was the natural step. I was able to, as a boy, as a child, I wanted to get away from who I was. I wanted to step out of my body. I wanted to call in other energies. I wanted to be someone else. And that was what helped me. You might find that a lot of actors do actually channel. They don't even sometimes know that they are channeling, but they will channel these energies. And it's almost like somebody else steps into you. And so I got into theater, and I didn't exist. And I would call on these energies, and the writers and the people that I would play, they would come in and they would go, wow, that's phenomenal. How do you do this? Even when I was Freddie Mercury, people would come to me and they would go, I know Freddie, I was his limo driver. I don't know how you can exist because every move you make, every sound is Freddie. There are things that you have said and done that nobody would know but Freddie, and I don't know how you can do it. And it was because I was channeling spirit. I became this open vessel. So when I was traveling, that was what I did, you know, playing Freddie and playing other characters. And I moved to San Francisco. It was sort of the universe felt like it was directing me there after I came back from London. And I moved to San Francisco and worked in the marketing office of the opera. and I got engaged. We're good friends now. We were terrible lovers. But when the engagement was broken off, I went, well, I don't know what I guess, you know what, I guess I'll move to L.A. Why not? I'll be an actor. Why not? So I came here and I was involved in, like you said, Tangerine is one of them. I emceed America's Next Top Model, Cycle 20, I think 20.
Wow.
It was where the first time the men were introduced. I was on Modern Family, Arrested Development, The Bee in Apartment 23. It was just, you know, a lot of bit parts, some walk-on roles, but some low-budget films. But it was fun. I enjoyed it. It's not what I pursue now, but I did enjoy it.
That's great experience to have that, you know, just to work for different types of shows and just to get that behind-the-scenes Hollywood kind of experience and the walk-on roles, whatever it is. Just still to have that experience in the industry has got to be fascinating.
Well, my first day in Hollywood, I ended up doing what every person who comes to Hollywood does. And I walked down Hollywood Boulevard and I had something to eat at, oh goodness, I think it was Hard Rock Cafe. And then they had the street sort of cordoned off. They were filming, was it Gangster Squad from, it was the 20s with the shootout in the theater or whatever it was. And the street, they had a big green screen across the street, and they had all of these old cars, and then they had, I think it was Matt Damon, or anyway, somebody, some big name, coming out of the theater and firing blanks back towards the Chinese theater. And I said to the universe, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to do. One day I'll do this. This is what I will do. Well, 1 year later, to the day, I was filming background for Saving Mr. Banks, and I was limo driver number 3. You can't see me in the movie, but I was there. I was the third limo driver back, and I said to the universe, "That's not what I meant. That's not what I meant." But it is what I got because it is what I asked for.
That's funny. Yeah, you got exactly what you asked for. You just got to think about next time when you ask for something, get more detailed on that request.
As detailed as you can be. It's sort of like someone asking a genie. Genie, I wish to be thin. Okay, now you're sick. Now you're really, you know. I want to make a lot of money. Okay, now you've made a lot of money, comparatively speaking, and you have littered it away and you've paid taxes and you have enjoyed it. And now you've made a lot more money than other people have in their lifetimes. So there you have it. So you have to be very specific. You have to find a way to ask the universe for things without, it's sort of very specific. Okay. If you want to lose weight, you go, I will lose weight. I will lose 15 pounds and be healthy, and my clothing will fit, and I am causing no harm to myself or to anyone else. I am liking the way that I look. Other people are finding me attractive. I am healthy. All of these sort of, you have to find those loopholes. Any way around it that it could be, you have to be extremely specific.
Absolutely. That's a good point. For those of you listening out there, you can also go to Richard Lael's site, thegentlemansidekick.com. It's spelled out exactly how he sounds. Kind of get an overview and check out the pictures. You have an amazing style to you, the Victorian and the Edwardian lifestyle, which, I mean, who doesn't love that? I mean, that's awesome. And the clothing you have is not like cheap costume stuff. That's like the real deal stuff. It's quality stuff. So awesome.
It is. A lot of my clothing, I do wear some modern clothes that are styled old, and I'll wear a mix. Sometimes, even right now, I'm wearing trousers that are 130 years old. So
wow.
My collar is a starched white collar. It looks Edwardian, but it's brand new. So I mix things. I move things around and I mix them. And it started when I was a boy. It was just I was a strange, eccentric kid, and I loved the 18th, 19th, and early 20th centuries. And I would do my best to dress like that because it was kind of a, being a cartoon villain. I always wanted to be a cartoon villain. They always were so eloquently and they had the greatest
mustache at the end and everything. Yeah.
Exactly. So I in those early days I decided that I liked it. And then as I grew as a teenager, I went into some experimental phases where I was trying to – I was so odd and slightly effeminate and people couldn't tell if I was male or female and sort of androgynous. And so I thought, well, they're going to look at me and they're going to laugh no matter what I do, so I might as well give them something to laugh at. So I went really flamboyant. We're talking I would wear – capes and top hats, and I remember at 15 I would go to school dressed like a vampire, and I would tell them that I was 315 years old. it was a way that I could control where people were looking, and then I realized I really do enjoy these things. I really do enjoy being that eccentric. I don't tell people I'm a vampire. Now they tell me I'm a vampire. So, you know, it comes full circle.
There you go. and it's funny, you know, you see people dressed like that and you think, oh, well, they're going to some occasion or they're dressed up in some kind of costume. But when I see you in that, I just see you the way you are. It's not like you're in some kind of costume going sort of like, oh, there's Richard Lael and he's, you know, you got, mm-hmm. you're dressed that way, and it's a natural thing for you. So that's
sure.
very cool.
Well, I was on a show called Jubilee Media Odd Man Out, and it was several psychics had to find the non psychic, and as we went through on this game show, the first woman, I didn't like her. She was rude to everybody. She was rude to me, and I went, okay, first round, we'll get rid of her. The second round, another woman who had been polite to me up until this one moment. Then she turns to me and says, oh, yeah, well, maybe you're a fake because you're wearing makeup. And I went, yeah, I'm wearing makeup, and I don't like your tone. So when it came time for me to vote, I went to the end of the polling place, the little voting place, and I paused, and I thought to myself, I know it's this other girl. I know it's the other girl. I know it is. I even told the producer, I said beforehand, she's a beautiful young woman who is mixed ethnicity, and I know it's her. I know it's her. But I went, no, okay, rationally we're playing a game, and maybe everyone is on my side. Maybe everyone understands. Maybe we get rid of the people we don't really care for, and then that means that we can keep playing. But next round, I'll vote for Paris. That's the next round. So everyone, they ask if you would like to continue the game, raise your hand. And I and one other person raised our hands. We were on either sides of this woman, and nobody else raised the hand to vote. And I went, it was you. I knew you were going to be next. Why did nobody vote to continue playing the game? I thought we were all in this together. But she says, well, what do you mean? What do you mean? I said, well, it was going to be you because you look great, but you're trying so hard. She says, what? I went, well, you're very pretty, but it looks like you Googled how does a psychic dress with your tie-dyes and your crystals. I went, it's beautiful, but it looks costumey. And then, of course, the internet ripped me apart and said, oh, yeah, you're in a tuxedo. And I went, yeah, but I always wear these things.
Yeah. You're not putting it on just for the shoot today. You're actually wear that all the time, so you're dressed normal.
Exactly. They wanted you to dress normally, but they didn't really want you to dress sort of flamboyantly. But I went, you know, I'll wear my brooches and I'll wear my cravat and my high collars. I don't care.
Yeah. None of that. No t-shirts or something like that, because that always looks terrible on film anyway. You got a good look going for it, so that's cool.
Thank you. I enjoy.
How did you come up with the idea of the gentleman psychic?
Well, you know what? Going along, I had a business partner. We were doing entertainment. We were working parties. We were doing these things. We had some things come up, and our partnership came to its natural end. We're still good friends, but it was just we went in different directions, and the universe sort of shook me upside down. And I went, okay, well, you know what? I have worked for at least 10 years doing parties and events and things. And I've been clairvoyant. And I've been psychic. I've been a medium for all of my life. Maybe if I just offer it to some friends on social media, maybe it can kind of help get me through the bridge. So I posted on Facebook, you know, I will give you a psychic reading. Let me know. So people started coming to me, and then they started sending their friends to me, and then more of their friends and their friends. And a friend of a friend who is now a friend, she had posted in a review, Richard Lale is a gentleman and a psychic. And I went, oh, that's everything I want it to be. That's perfect. The gentleman psychic.
That's great.
Thank you. I it's been good to me.
Yeah, I mean, it works. It's something different and interesting, and it kind of draws you in. So I think it works because you're natural. It's just the way you are, and that's what, when people see you, that's what they kind of expect. So it's a natural thing. So it works great for you. The whole Victorian style is a great thing. I mean, we all love that. You know, I was way into the goth scene in high school and stuff as well. And I grew up loving the whole vampire community, but not as being a vampire, but living in, you know, the old antique style stuff, dark lit rooms. I even had a bedroom looked like a dungeon. Like the walls were all painted like marbleized and stuff, and I had flickering candlelight and stuff. Oh yeah, I'm a pro musician and a showman, so I got to do the whole or make everything fancy the way it should look. So, but yeah, your house is interesting where you live. I mean, we were just talking about the Ghost Adventures episode in the Pasadena House, and I see your videos and stuff that you post on YouTube, and I'm like wondering, like, is that just a room that he made up for that? Because it looks so cool. And then I saw that episode. I'm like, no way. The whole house is like that. That's incredible. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with your house.
Well, I live in a beautiful 1890 Victorian in Pasadena, and I don't own it. I wish I did. I love this house. So where I take my calls and I do my seances and where I do my videos is what I call the seance room. It's in the tower, and it has a plethora of ghosts and spirits and what people call knockers or the Tommy knockers, even in parts of Europe. So there are energies from the earth, from the natives who lived here. There are 300 years worth of antiques and artifacts that I have collected that are here. Then I'm haunted. The house itself is haunted. One in particular that if I don't say his name, he'll get upset. So the original owner of the house, his name is Victor, or at least that's what he likes to be called, is Victor.
Cool.
And when I moved in, I was busy. I was figuring out, you know, where I was moving things and what I was going to do and where I was, how things were going to work out. And I didn't really introduce myself. And I kept seeing this gentleman over in the corner of my eye in the chamber. And I went, okay, well, I see somebody. That's, you know, I'll let him do his business. Let me do mine. Mm. And one morning I awakened with him standing over my bed screaming, "What are you doing in here?" So I realized, okay, I have to sort of clear the energy. I have to make him aware of who I am. And I said to him, "Listen, I don't own this house. I appreciate you letting me live here. I'm going to be bringing in furniture from your time period so that it will make you comfortable. It will make you feel at home. It will make you feel like it is your space. And if I owned the house, I would make certain that you had your space again, but I don't own the house." So I said, "But I appreciate you letting me be here. Well, after this, Patty Negri comes in to do a seance in my house with Father Sebastian and maybe a couple other people. And Patty says, Patty says, oh, there's this beautiful Victorian gentleman standing over here by these doors, and he's just so lovely. I went, oh, yes, well, I know him. We've had our little talk. We've cleared the air. And that was where we did the spirit session, and it said several times, Victor, 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 Victor. So I just call him. I call him Victor. Whether or not that was his name, I don't know. But he does. He likes to be called Victor. A funny thing, though, is that with the spirit box, there was a somebody else had a spirit box on them, and the spirit box kept saying Victor, and then it would go Satan, Satan, devil, devil, Satan, Satan. And the other person who had the box went, oh, that's not good. That's not good. Oh, that's not good. Oh, that's not good. And I went, actually, it's pretty cognitive, because if you're looking around my space, there's a painting of me dressed as Satan, and
yeah,
there's a devil statue, and there's another, there's a depiction of the devil. There's Satan over there. It's being cognitive. It's just going through saying, oh, look at this devil. Look at this. Oh, that's what that is. That's a devil. So nothing bad, just funny.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a cool picture. I saw that in the TV show as well. And that's interesting. But people start when they hear something like a word like the devil or Satan or something coming through a box,
mm-hmm.
they just go into panic mode. It's like, I mean, there could be a negative presence showing up, but it might not be there to terrorize everybody or to possess anybody. It could be just there to see what's going on and moving on. It's not always about
exactly.
Hollywood.
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing, too, is that when Aaron sat down, he said, Aaron Goodwin. Now, I hadn't
awesome.
Watched the show in some time, and I didn't know, I really didn't know anything that was going on. And they had asked me about the stories. I thought they were just doing the house. And then they ended up by asking me, oh, well, can you do a seance? I went, sure, why not? So I sit down, Aaron comes in, and he says, I have never played with a Ouija board. I probably won't do it again, but I really feel very safe here. I feel very much like I am in some sort of club, in some sort of safe space, and I'm really glad to be here. So we sit down, and the board spells out G-O-D. W-I-N. And
yeah,
Aaron's face. Aaron's face, he goes, oh, my name is Goodwin. Does it want to talk to these? Are we out the card? Yes, yes, it does want to talk to you. He was so terrified, but he was so lovely.
That it was the funniest thing, and I love that about that show. I love when Aaron just like has that moment of self-realization, like, what? And he just kind of freaks out. The second that happened, the look on his face, I'm like, oh my God, this is so great. He just started going into panic mode, and at that point, everything's freaking him out. That was so great.
It was really funny. You know, they only stayed here for that evening. My goodness, they were out really early. I started to go to the hotel, and they went, "Listen, we've gotten so much stuff from here. We've gotten orbs. We've gotten full body apparitions. We've heard the knocks, and we've gotten them on videotape." So, yeah, there's a lot of energy here. I went, well, you know, it's what I do. And Jack Parsons down the street, he was a Salemite, follower of Aleister Crowley. And there's the Devil's Gate Dam up the road. And then there's the Suicide Bridge, they call it, on the Colorado Street Bridge.
Yep.
I went, you know, Parsons has a lot of energy.
That whole area definitely has a lot of energy. I've investigated all the places that you just mentioned and experienced that the same thing, but it's a certain type of energy that's kind of flowing through there, which makes it, I think, more susceptible for a lot of places. And it ends obviously at the very end where the bridge is, and all that negative energy, people just hurting themselves and jumping because of depression, that all kind of coagulates
mm-hmm.
on like the end of a riverbed, just kind of flowing out there. So it's pretty interesting. I've actually walked through that old dry, right there on the other side of the dam when it was dried up, and there was like some kind of altar in the middle of it with these rocks and these big crosses that were made. It was really strange stuff out there.
Wow. Well, I never went down below. I only stayed up on the walk bridge.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. There's a lot of energy here. A lot of hundreds of years worth of energy. Even in my own, where I live now, sometimes we'll have what feels like phantom earthquakes. So I'll sit here and my table will be jumping across the room. My tea will be sloshing in the cup. Or the mirrors will be shaking, or the crystals will be swinging. And I look and go, especially if I'm on the phone or, something happens, I'll say, oh, okay, I'm having an earthquake, and they can see things swaying. And then when we Google, there's no earthquake. So it's very peculiar.
That's awesome. I got to come investigate your house and check it out. I have this friend named Patty said she was going to hit you up about it, but we haven't got there yet.
Yeah, I would be honored. I'd love to have you. I'd love to see you. I would love to have you over for tea, because that's one of my witches brews.
I would love that. That'd be great.
Well, people come here and they sit down for tea and they enjoy themselves. Most people stay 5, 6, 7, 10 hours just enjoying the tea and the hors d'oeuvres and the communication, and it's not there's no pressure and people are not on their phones and it's really quite nice.
Awesome, looking forward to that. Love to check that out. There's another thing I want to talk about. I know you were just talking about Aleister Crowley, and you're an occultist writer as well.
I do study the occult. Yes, Aleister Crowley is one of the ones that I do study, and I have learned a lot about him and through him and by him.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, a lot of my work is derived from Crowley.
That's great. Yeah. I'm always talking about the Crowley stuff. I used to be a big follower of Crowley. I have I use the Thoth deck myself. You know, because it's got the extra trumps and stuff, so it makes it a little more detailed. I love it.
Absolutely. That was my very first deck, and I still have it.
Really? Mine was the little Rider deck, the little tiny yellow one. I had the baby size one because I started reading when I was about 5 or 6. So
wow.
And I still have that original deck. It's pretty crazy.
That is phenomenal. I grew up in the church, so Pentecostal. So on one hand, they didn't diminish the thoughts of demons and witches and ghosts and ghouls and the supernatural and the paranormal. But on the other hand, if I would have brought in a Ouija board or a deck of cards, my parents would have hit the roof. So you're lucky that you had them at such a tender age.
Yeah, I got lucky to have a mom that was already very into all that stuff as a young age growing up. So I learned very, very young, and I got into her books, and I started practicing the craft and everything, and just kind of learning about that energy and stuff, and learning about myself growing up at the same time, and then just fell into it. It just became natural for me. I mean, I never considered myself to be a psychic medium, but I see and talk to spirits all the time, so it's like, okay, whatever.
Well, and that's what it is, too, is that it depends upon... It depends upon what you're focusing on. In the Christian world, people who do what I do, they call them prophets and prophetesses, and they can talk to the dead, or they even there's a fellow, he's an evangelical, I can't remember his name, but sometimes when I want a good laugh, exorcist Bob Larson.
Oh, Bob Larson, yeah.
He makes me laugh. Some of these people he's casting out demons, I go, really? Really?
Yeah.
He makes
it's so Hollywood all of a sudden. It's like, what? What are you doing?
I have been possessed, and I have never had any of those things happen.
Yeah. Like I say that too. I've come across two demonic cases, and one was very interesting and pretty intense, but it wasn't like the movies where, oh, they're going to try to possess us and we're all going to die. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like a teenage slasher film. It was like a knowledge demon or whatever they do, because they all have different functions. And it was hanging out, cruising through, and one of my buddies, who was a crystal witch at the time, was trying to do some things to make better communication. And then, you know, demonics, they need to feed, so they slowly just – absorb your energy, and it drained him, and he was getting weak. So pulled him out, and then I encountered another one at a mausoleum in Hollywood, and it was just the intensity of the pressure of it, and it just felt warm, and it smelled terrible, but you can give me the impression of it. But once again, it wasn't interested in what we were doing. It's just cruising through, and just showed up and cruised through and disappeared. It's like, okay.
Well,
so there,
and what I
like
people, I'm sorry, go on.
I said it's not like Hollywood. It's not like that.
No, no, it's not like the movies at all. I always recommend for people to approach it as you would if you're throwing a dinner party. And you have on your list, I want this friend, and this friend always brings exciting friends, so this one is going to bring three or four people, and this one I would like to meet that one. You're sort of arranging these things. So you throw this party, and you know the kind of energy to expect. But if someone gets out of hand, if someone starts getting drunk, or they start yelling, or they start smashing, then you have to go, you have to stand your ground, and you have to say, I have to ask you to leave. You have to exit my house, please. You have to go. And if they don't go, then you have to call in the cops. You have to call in a more authoritative force. But it's the same way in the spirit world. You don't just open your door. I lived in Hollywood. So you don't open your door and tell everybody, hey, come on in. Come in my house. You meth head, and you crack dealer, and you prostitute, and you all of these things. You go, well, wait a minute. I don't think I trust you to come into my house. You might be a good, lovely person outside, but you can't come in my house. And that's sort of the way that it is in your own realm, as you are in control of the guest list.
That's true, and you make the ground rules, you know?
If someone gets rowdy, then you stand your ground and you kick them out. You say, nope, I've had enough of that.
You have to go. Absolutely. And that's what it is for everybody out there doing paranormal investigations. You know, you go out there, you get into that energy, and they might kind of like you and might want to hang out with you. I mean, I've taken spirits of animals home with me before, but, you know, you always lay those ground rules down saying, hey, you guys, you know, thanks for hanging out with us and talking to us and whatever. And, we'll see you again, but you guys have to stay here and blah, blah, blah. And that's how it goes.
Exactly. You always have to approach it respectfully, but be firm.
Excellent. So we're coming to the end of the show. We have about 2 minutes left. Where can people look for you? I already set out the gentlemanpsychic.com. What else can people be looking for you for?
You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. My YouTube is great. The Gentleman Psychic, you'll love that. Find me on Patreon.com. If you look for Patreon.com, The Gentleman's House, because it's another project that I'm working on. But The Gentleman's House is Patreon. There's all kinds of ways that you can find me.
Excellent, excellent. We'll keep an eye out for that. Whoa, she's like yelling at me. All right, so we're going to have to wrap. Thank you so much, my friend, for spending some time with us. And
my pleasure.
Fascinating, and I really look forward to getting together with you soon. So let's try to plan something.
I look forward to it. Have a good night, my friend.
You too. All right, everybody, that's going to be it for tonight's show. Our guest, once again, has been the Gentleman Psychic, Mr. Richard Lale Lillard, who you can go to see at – why are you yelling at me? At thegentlemanpsychic.com, learn a little bit more. Once again, a very, very good psychic. I recommend if you want to get a reading done, you can go to his page and sign up for that. There's a little section on there, and it kind of tells you what you can expect. I'm just going to tell you can expect it to be awesome because he does such a great job. Highly recommended from me. Here at My Darkest Hour, right here on Live Paranormal History FM Radio, iHeart Radio, and iTunes, and the 17 other stations that we're broadcasting to right now that I can't even think of. But I appreciate you all. Shout out to my sponsors, Chili Man Salsa, Lizzie Wizzy's Crafty Creation, and of course, everybody out there at Blog Talk Radio holding it down for us. And we will see you guys next time right here on My Darkest Hour. We'll be right back.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you're
listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on LiveParanormal.com.